I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, y'all, it's Tom Haverstroh here. And with this week, we are bringing you two special episodes of The Next Chapter with Prim Saripapat. In these transparent conversations powered by LG Electronics, former college and pro tennis player Prim Saripapat held a roundtable live from the Final Four to discuss the challenges athletes face preparing for and transitioning from performing on the biggest stage. Okay, so in part two, Prim is joined by Dr. Brian Hanline, Chief Medical Officer for the NCAA, and Dr. Corey Yeager, psychotherapist for the Detroit Pistons. They discuss how the road home from the big dance can be pivotal, even defining moment for many student athletes. Prim Saripapat and the panel explores the letdown athletes experience following the postseason and how that complicated nature, the feelings and the emotions can influence the return to normal activities. The topic of mental health and sports, it's extremely meaningful and relevant at the moment, and we hope that you enjoy these two very thoughtful conversations from those who live it, coach it, train it every single day.
Hey, everybody. I'm Prim. Welcome to The Next Chapter. So we are taking the show on the road once again, as you can probably see if you're watching on video and also here. It's very loud here at FanFest, but we are at the 2023 NCAA Men's Final Four in Houston, Texas. Oh my gosh, the atmosphere here is amazing at the GRB Convention Center. Couldn't think of a better place to hold this conversation. And speaking of meaningful conversations, this week we continue our LG Transparent Conversation series addressing student athlete mental health and well-being, and it's all being powered by LG Electronics USA. So in our first episode last week, we talked about the buildup, the big dance, and the road to the elite stage. And in this second episode, we're going to talk about the other side of it, the come down, if you will, the downfall or the transition that athletes experience following the postseason as they return home from the elite stage. That is not to say that all athletes experience this crash, so to speak, or this downfall, but it certainly is a change. It's a transition. And so we explore this period that athletes experience. And so joining me today in this LG Transparent Conversation episode is Dr. Brian Hanline. He is a Chief Medical Officer for the NCAA and the first person to hold this very important position with the NCAA. Prior to this, he was also the Chief Medical Officer for the USTA, the United States Tennis Association. It's an organization we know very well, at least he and I. And we also have Dr. Corey Yeager, a researcher, activist, author, therapist, and also someone who's been working with the Detroit Pistons for a very long time as their life coach. Really hope that you get something out of this discussion. So without further ado, here we are sitting at the GRB Convention Center talking about student athletes and mental health.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think we are ready to go. We've got our headphones on. We got the mics on. The mics are hot, which means no cursing unless you really, 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 really have to. Although we are a very casual atmosphere. Speaking of amazing atmosphere, I just see basketball
everywhere.
Basketball's everywhere. Fans are roaming. I mean, there's got to be hundreds, maybe even thousands here. The atmosphere is absolutely electric. So exciting. So we want to welcome all of you into our LG Transparent Conversations, a series addressing such an important topic, student-athlete mental health and well-being, something that's very near and dear to my heart, as all of you know. And it's all being powered by LG Electronics USA. So the basketballs, obviously, we're here for March Madness. We are here for the 2023 NCAA Men's Final Four in Houston, Texas. And the energy at GRB Convention Center is pretty amazing. Although, Dr. Hainline, I know you've been to, what, 11 tournaments? So this is par for the course for you, is it not?
No, everyone's incredible.
Yes. Well, I am Prim Saripapat, your host and moderator. I'm going to be doing a lot of talking today, but I will step aside because we have two amazing panelists here today. But I have to say to both of you, as a former student athlete and Duke tennis player and also longtime sports broadcaster, but also now somebody who decided to be a masochist and return to school, but to get my doctorate in counseling psychology with the hopes of helping the athlete population. This is such a dream come true to be using our platform for such a good cause and to be engaging in this discussion. So it's an honor to be here. And thank you to you both for joining us today. So let's start off with Dr. Brian Hainline. Dr. Hainline is not only the chief medical officer for the NCAA, but the first to hold this important position with the NCAA. And prior to this, he was the chief medical officer for the USTA, the United States Tennis Association, an organization we both know. Which one have you been to more, the NCAA tournament or the US Open?
I think I've been to about 40 US Open events.
I'll see you there at this year's US Open. But in Dr. Hainline's role with the NCAA, he is focused on promoting and developing safety and excellence and wellness for college student athletes all across the country. Obviously a very important position with a lot of responsibility. And of course, we have Dr. Corey Yeager, a researcher, activist, author. He's got a new book out. Gonna have to ask him to at least talk about it. You didn't bring, I told you, you should have brought your new book.
I know, a lot going on.
You're probably, yes,
but
yes.
I'll surely talk about it.
Author, therapist, and also has been working with the Detroit Pistons as their life coach for many years. And in addition to those within the NBA, some of his other clients also include the Oprah Winfrey Network, the Smithsonian Institute, the Gersh Agency, and Lola Red. I mean, if Oprah Winfrey is one of your clients, hey, you could just drop the mic right there.
That is the queen.
She is the queen. It is. So this particular discussion marks the second of these two discussions that we are having here at the Final Four. The first one was about the crescendo, the big dance and the road to the elite stage. We had a wonderful conversation. Two of our panelists were student athletes, including Trace Jackson Davis, All-American and team captain for Indiana. And we also had Jairus Walker, freshman for the Houston Cougars. And they had a lot of insightful things to say, as well as our other clinician, Lisa Bontasumi. This particular discussion, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but the main focus is going to be on the come down, the decline. Sometimes athletes experience this crash, not everybody, but this crash or decline that we experience from the elite stage. And we designed this discussion to highlight the ebbs and flow of the season and also the student athlete experience. So first question I want to pose, I'm going to stop talking now. When you think about this period after the big dance, what are your thoughts that come to mind when you're thinking about the student athlete experience? Dr. Hainline?
Well, it's very important to always put things in the context of transition. And so we can use words like decline, but I prefer to say, well, this is a transition to the next part of your journey. And when you're using language like that, you're focusing on the individual human being, sort of their soulful aspect of who they are. And yes, this competition is incredible, it's phenomenal, and everyone wants to win, but someone's not going to win, and so how do you incorporate that into the next part of your journey in life? And that's the mindset we really want to get the athletes to focus on, that this isn't the ultimate, this is one part of many things that are going to be incredible in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think to Doc's point, one of the things that I think about is all of these teams come. You have 64 teams that begin down to 32, Sweet 16, Elite 8, and then here finally at the Final Four. So that means there's only going to be one team out of all those teams that go home with the last game being a victory. So that's tough. That's tough. And trying to prepare yourself as athletes for that end, hoping that you're that one team, but knowing you'll be maybe more likely to be one of those 63 teams that doesn't end in victory. So one thing as a therapist that I think about is the grief and loss that is associated with the ending. Right, that's a version, a level of engaging grief and loss around the end of that season or the end of your career if you're a senior. So I think there's a ton of different things that these players are thinking about, many of them positive, but some of them not so positive. So how are we supporting them through that process, I think is really important.
Both of you bring up such excellent points. And Dr. Hainline, I appreciate what you said about the transitions, because you're right. I mean, it's the natural course of any athlete's career. You know, it's part of the season. Of course, we're seeing seasons now kind of going all year round, but within the context of college basketball and some of these other sports, you do have maybe a 10-month season, so to speak. But Dr. Yeager, you mentioned that grief and that loss, and that I can connect with that because I remember as a student athlete, the moment the season ends, it's just kind of like, okay, we don't have practice anymore. We have at least a little bit of a break for us tennis players. We always had the NCAA individual tournament afterwards, but it's just this weird feeling. It's like, okay, we don't have we don't have practice anymore. We don't have strength and conditioning. We don't have as many team meetings. And so regardless of whatever happened, whether or not you met expectations, there is that sense of loss.
Yeah.
And I would imagine maybe that's why athletes do experience this so-called crash. Again, not every athlete experiences it, but I certainly did, because it's like, wow, what now and what happens?
And I think athletes are prone and seek structure, right? From a young age, we have practices and we have season and in season and off season. So the structures that are set up for athletes are really important. So when the season comes to an end, that structure goes away. It may be just for a brief period of time, but it goes away. So how are we supporting them to kind of think through what that may look or feel like when the season does come to an end? And I use that idea and that concept of grief and loss in a lot of the work that I do with athletes, with different individual games, or when players get traded in the NBA, right, that they have the loss of that city that they were in.
Yeah, that's true.
The players that they were bonded with, their teammates, and then all of a sudden a brand new set. So I think there's a lot of connections to mental wellness in that journey.
Yeah, and you know, for some athletes, I think that some of them find it an opportunity maybe to take a break, because the season can be so rigorous, especially if you're an athlete who's dealing with all sorts of physical ailments. This is the postseason. Everybody gets injured, or a lot of athletes do, and you're pushing your body to the limit. So it might be an opportunity to take a nice little break. But for other athletes, maybe they find, again, it's that dip, and also going back to the academic demands too. I think oftentimes sports fans forget that they are a student first and they're an athlete second. But, you know, when the postseason comes, I mean, my gosh, they're missing class. They're missing opportunities to work on their homework assignment and all these other things. So it's certainly a balancing act. So as we're kind of hashing all of this stuff out, Dr. Hainline, anything come to mind in terms of what Dr. Yeager was saying in terms of we can provide structure, or what are some strategies and interventions that athletes might be able to use as they go through this transition?
Well, the most important thing is that we understand what the data tell us and then how we can be proactive. And the data tell us unequivocally that transition out of sport is probably the most vulnerable time in an athlete's life to develop a mental health disorder. And so understanding that, how do we arm the athletes in a community that we're preparing them for that transition? And one of the other things we understand, and it's interesting how you said, you know, we are students first, But we understand also that a lot of athletes identify as athletes first, and that becomes their primary identity, and being a student maybe is a secondary or tertiary identity. And those that identify as athletes primarily, they're at much more risk for transition out of sport. So what we really need to try to do is to empower athletes to understand who they are as human beings, and that their identity is not being the athlete, their identity is a human being who is an athlete. And that we, as a community, we prepare the athletes for when they are going to move out of sport. And so we can do that in a logical way for collegiate sport, because everyone is going to be transitioning out of collegiate sport in one way or the other. Yep. It's more difficult when you have a sudden transition because of an injury or an illness, or you get cut from the team. And so the critical part is at the community level, which is at the school level, there's a system set up of wellness and focus on everyone being there for everyone else. And so that community of wellness and support, if that really is an integral part of who you are as an athlete at that institution, at that community level, that's probably the most protective thing we can do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the community and the surrounding landscape and the messages that we receive from society and especially our intermediate circles is so important in terms of identity expansion rather than having such a salient athletic identity, which is certainly something that I identified with, which is why my transition from sport was so difficult. So let's take this conversation a step further. How do we as a community ensure that even within this context of the NCAA tournament and spotlight, I mean, as an athlete, this is what you gear up for. This is everything that athletes have been dreaming of. Within the sports community, it's all about this. So then how do we, as a supportive community, make sure athletes are much more equipped to know that they are something beyond just being an athlete?
I think one of the important factors there is educating the community about what this could look and feel like. Because oftentimes that community may have a lack of understanding what athletes may be going through, what they may not be going through, especially if you think about coaching staffs and front office staffs in the NBA, there's a generational difference, right? So the coach may be 60 years old and the GMs, they may be older, and these athletes are 19, 20 years old. So there's a difference in understanding mental wellness between those generations. So finding the ability to educate all parties involved that are vested in that athlete's success, both on and off the court or on and off the field. Mm-hmm. So I think educating that community is critically important. One strategy I think is most important when we talk about athletes is focusing on understanding internal dialogues. How we speak to ourselves is critically important. But too often we don't even realize that we have these long, deep conversations with ourselves. We're not really aware of it. On some level we know it's occurring, but we're not deeply, intentionally aware of how that operates. So educating all parties, athletes, community, teams, around what this internal dialogue looks and feels like, because whatever that dialogue is really the journey that you're probably traveling. So if you can shift that, if it's a negative dialogue that I am having with myself, if I can begin to first understand and become aware of it, I think that's the first step. And then I can impact that journey by moving those negative thoughts, feelings, conversations, and dialogue that I have with myself into a more positive space. I think that is a strategy, and I think it's a cornerstone strategy that athletes need to get a hold of, because that can help move that journey in a more positive way, especially in those transitional times, right? As I transition to the end of the season, as I transition from my sport into being just a quote-unquote regular person, right? How I have that discussion with myself will help me or hinder me. So I think that's a critical understanding that we need.
Yeah, enhancing that positive inner voice, if
yes.
you will. Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is journal, and that's my way of kind of keeping track of my inner voice. It's something that I do every single morning.
Yes.
It helps helps me engage in the reflective process and also enhances my self-awareness, and something that I try to encourage with the clients that I'm working with, if that's something that they feel like they want to do. Dr. Hanlein, yes.
And the research tells us, in the psychological realm, therapeutic realm, the more often that we can get these feelings and emotions out, right, it relieves pressure around those situations. So journaling, speaking to someone, what is that doing? That's allowing me to get rid of any of those negative feelings or thoughts that I may be having. All too often, I think the struggle is that athletes are almost more prone to hold it in, right? Because they don't want to be vulnerable, especially at the, I think about not just the NCAA level, but at the professional level. If I share my struggles with anyone, that could be a mark on me. That could be a mark against me. So I won't do it. I'll hold it back. And we know that that just boils and bubbles inside, and I don't have an avenue in which to get it out. But even if I don't want to share it with someone else, journaling, being able to write those thoughts and feelings down is a release, is a relief. And I think that's one of the things that's really important for athletes.
Yeah, let's, you know, we're talking about, we were originally talking about, you know, just this decline, and then it evolved into a conversation, a subset of athletes who are transitioning out of sport, right? Because there's multiple subsets and groups of athletes. After they go to the postseason, some of them are going to be returning. One of our other student athletes that joined our panel, he's a freshman, Jairus Walker. So he's going to be back hopefully next year, you know, with the Houston Cougars. But for somebody like Trace Jackson Davis with Indiana, he's most likely going to go and join the, you know, declare himself for the 2023 NBA draft. So that's going to be his transition, but he's hopefully going to be playing more basketball. But for most student athletes, including myself, the rest of the 98%, you know, of the seniors, that's going to be it for us. So what kinds of things, when we're talking about student athlete mental health and well-being, and for those, that group that's going to be leaving sport, we've talked about identity, we've talked about other strategies involving that, improving our self-talk. Anything else that comes to mind, Dr. Hanlein?
Well, I wouldn't put it so much just on the student athlete. I think really this is an opportunity to engage and say the entire culture needs to change. And there are sort of four pillars to this culture. One is from a top-down approach. So let's say at a school, it starts actually with the president. The president says that mental health matters on this campus for students and student athletes. And in the athletics department, part of that top-down is that the athletic director says this is what matters. And then the second pillar is the coaches. The data tell us that coaches are the single most important influence on an athlete's life. And if the coach has an attitude that your wellness matters, and that if you have a mental health symptom or a mental health disorder, that should be equally treated as if you have an ankle sprain. So that messaging is very important. The third is that the student athletes actually support one another. And it's sort of like a bystander effect, that if they're really trained to understand that when someone's being more withdrawn or someone is acting differently, that it's okay to intervene and say, hey, what's up? And that there's that natural support system. And the fourth pillar is that every athlete knows where to go, where they can receive culturally sensitive mental health care. And if you have that, and that's built in at every single level, at every school, and then you multiply that, that becomes a societal change. So that's sort of one important thing. And then I'll go to the self-talk. I'm going to use a tennis metaphor.
I love it. So, I'm down for tennis metaphors anytime.
So I actually did a weekend crash course on mental toughness in tennis. And it was all about the inner dialogue that we have. Mm-hmm. And so you can... You know, you miss a shot, you miss a point, and you say, oh man, I'm so terrible, or I can't believe what a jerk I am, and this and that. And the whole thing was to turn it around. So, okay, so you're down 6-2, 3-1, 40 love. And before the point, you say, isn't it incredible that I have an opportunity to do something different right now? And if that becomes your self-talk, that's a metaphor for all sorts of things that happen in your life, and say, this is really bad that such and such happened. There's a grief, there's a loss.
That's right.
But the grief and loss become an opportunity for how, as human beings, we dig into that creative part of our soul, and we have a different outlook, and our journey changes. And the journey is defined by something more creative and magical, and not by the numbers, not by the win or loss, but by who you are, as my favorite expression, as a soulful human being.
It is all about the process, right? Rather than just the end game or the results or what manifests from it. It's always about the journey and the process. I was laughing when you were talking about when you use the tennis analogy, and the book that comes to mind is The Inner Game of Tennis. I'm sure you have, I mean, everybody knows that. In and around tennis, it's such a fantastic book. But I'm also laughing because tennis players, Dr. Yeager, I don't know if you know this, but tennis players are infamous for being out on the court and just having weird dialogues with themselves. I mean, you would see me out on the court and being like, literally having a full-blown conversation with yourself. And my husband, as I was going through my media career, and my husband was like, is it normal for, why do tennis players just like, just full stream talk to themselves? I'm like, yeah, because A, you're by yourself the entire time for about 2 to 4 hours, and you have to learn how to be your own coach. So if you're alone, you manufacture company. So that's why we talk to ourselves. And I still do it till this day. That's when funny. I'm like washing dishes, especially now with kids, I'm like, okay, well, it's time to do this. And where are we going to go? I don't know. I forgot the salt. We got to go this. And I was like, anyways, we digress. I digress. But when you were talking about the inner dialogue, that made me laugh. And it brought back some hilarious moments of myself. What you were talking about in terms of the four pillars, there's so much to tackle with that. But you are right. It's about the top-down approach. It's making sure that psychoeducation, Dr. Yeager, before we hopped on the set, you were talking about the importance of psychoeducation and integrating all of this stuff and making sure the community and support system is armed with the information so they can pass this forward to the athletes, right? It's not just about the athletes. The both of you have so much experience and are in current positions where you are working hand in hand with people who are in charge. And we still yet live in a society where there's so much work to be done in terms of tackling, destigmatizing the mental health landscape. So when you're trying to work rather than against the system and work with the system, how do you do that? What kind of advice do you offer for somebody like me who's now entering the clinical space to learn how to be an activist to instill change and make sure our community has some of those elements that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think a word that comes to mind is reframe. That we have to reframe how we are experiencing the support of mental wellness, especially in the sports realm. We have to reframe how we are beginning the process of normalization, right? Because mental wellness is yet to be normalized in our society. Physical health is normalized, but mental wellness and mental health is not. So I think that conversations like this, opportunities within the NCAA with teams and universities to get a good grasp and hold on reframing and normalizing these conversations. I think that's how you move the needle, is through conversation, through discussion. We don't have to seek agreement with one another from the beginning. Mm. What we should seek is understanding. Do we understand what your thoughts around mental wellness are compared to mine? That generational difference that I spoke about earlier, there's going to be language difference between how those generations see and engage mental wellness. So how do we start to normalize that conversation where we're all on the same page? That doesn't mean we agree, but we're all on the same page in terms of normalizing this. And the last thing that I would say is, anytime something like mental wellness can feel uncomfortable, there's discomfort associated with those discussions. But a reframe that I utilize is saying that anytime I feel discomfort, anytime I'm feeling some version or level of pain, instead of it being pain or discomfort for the sake of discomfort, because if it's that, we'll lean away from it. But if we can see that discomfort, that uncomfortable conversation, as an indication that we're growing, then I may lean into that. I may stick with that conversation a bit longer. And I think that's what is called for from the onset. We're still at the beginning of this normalization process. We're not deep into this. So if we can say, hey, it's going to be uncomfortable that we talk about and figure out ways in which to engage, but that should be an indication that we're growing, we're getting better. And if we can stay with that and maintain those that level of conversation, we can move the needle.
Dr. Hainline?
Well, I agree 100% with everything Dr. Yeager said, and I would add something in addition to that. And I would use data to help coaches understand the importance of mental health. So what are some of the data that we have that's unequivocal? That if you have a mental health disorder, it actually will predict a musculoskeletal injury. If you suffer a musculoskeletal injury and develop depression and anxiety, that will predict that you're going to take longer to heal. If you have a perfectly reconstructed ACL from an ACL surgery, and you develop an anxiety disorder postoperatively, regardless of the fact that it was perfectly reconstructed, that will predict a failure of that surgery. If you have a sleep disorder, that will predict the development of a musculoskeletal injury more than overtraining will. And then finally, if you have a mental health disorder, that will predict poor performance more than if you don't. So if coaches are armed with these kind of data and understand that mental health actually has a huge impact on physical health, on performance, then every coach in the world is going to want to say, well, I have to make certain that part of the normalization of what we're doing is that we're addressing mental health in the same way that we're addressing ankle sprains and ligament sprains and this and that. And so, you know, the whole culture shifts, that becomes critically important to your performance and to your overall well-being and to really the, you know, the minimization of injuries.
And Doc, I think that's an important thing, because what coaches are interested in are things that will help move their team in a positive way. So if they can grasp an understanding of that connection, right? What is the connection to supporting our players in terms of mental wellness? How does that equate to positive outcomes, wins, if you will, for my team? Because once they can connect those dots, they're much more prone to engage with that. They're much more prone to call for mental wellness support for their team. But that lack of understanding, if there's a gap in that understanding, they may have a tendency to lean away from, right? Sometimes they'll check the box and say, well, I have to hire someone, but I won't utilize that resource. So there's many spaces that will hire folks to come in and do mental wellness support, psychological support, but they may not necessarily utilize that space in a positive way because they don't understand it. And that's why I talk about the importance of psychoed, right? Oftentimes we have these high-level athletes. They're sharp. They're very smart. These coaches are very smart. So if we can educate them, they will move the needle on their own as opposed to being forced into, because if you force people into support, oftentimes it's not going to work.
There's no buy-in.
Right. There's not going to be buy-in. But if they can understand it, I think it changes the trajectory.
There's got to be buy-in. And yes. I understand from the coach's perspective, if you're like, I don't really understand, like, you know, my job is to help these athletes perform, and also my goal is to win. But if I can't connect the dots and see how this relates to what I've been hired to do and understand this bigger picture, there's not going to be that buy-in. It's almost like when you're working with an athlete, we're talking about the psychological impact of injury on athletes. In order for them to really buy into the rehab process, they have to understand the importance of it and how that's going to, including rest. But if they don't understand why they have to do something, they're not going to understand the significance of it.
That's right.
So kind of bringing it back to not just the discussion that we're having right now, but also the other panel that we had prior to this. And I kind of said, you know, people listening here or at home might be like, well, why are you talking about well-being and mental health at the NCAA tournament? Because we're talking about performance, right? Or why would we, in this particular discussion, why would we care about the road away from the big dance? Because, you know, that's not necessarily relevant to the student-athlete experience. But what you just mentioned, the physical, the mental, the psychological, the emotional, the spiritual component, all those things are really, they intersect and they intertwine. Because as much as we would like to, we can't separate the person from the athlete and the athlete from the person.
No.
We can't compartmentalize. I tried to. I thought I was. And then many years later, I realized I couldn't do that. Who I am on the court is who I am as a person. And so maybe that might, spreading that information around might create more buy-in from what you all were talking about with the community and the coaches and them understanding, oh, I see. So if we invest in the person, yes, now we're investing in the athlete.
Yes. It's that holistic approach, right? That holistic understanding the whole athlete is critically important. I've worked with a number of coaches, one that's in the NBA that does a lot of work, and he came up with the idea and the concept of holistic coaching, that I shouldn't just see the athlete and train only those techniques and skills on the court, but I must see the whole entire athlete. Who are they as a family member? Who are they as a husband or wife? Who are they as a brother, right? All of these connections that play a factor into who that person is. And if one of those pieces is off, if they're struggling with one of those elements, it's going to show up in their play. It's going to show up in their day-to-day. So that holistic approach to what you spoke about, Prem, is the critical cornerstone of how we move that forward.
I love that. Holistic coaching. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Dr. Hainline?
His name is J.D. Dubois. He's a heck of a coach.
Ah.
And he's got this holistic coaching approach that's really, really cool.
And I think, you know, this conversation needs to go to the entire public. It's a societal conversation. And so, like Dr. Yeager, and I've had the privilege of treating thousands and thousands of elite athletes at the collegiate level, the professional level, the Olympic level. And when you're in that privileged space, you understand that you're dealing with a human being who has the same concerns as every other human being out there. And when they get hurt, they feel it. When they have a breakup, they feel it. When they're in financial distress, they feel it. Yet what we tend to do as a society is we treat these athletes, we objectify them in the worst way of using the word objectify. And so we put them in this special place, and then when they do well, we praise them. When they do poorly, we crucify them. And that's carried through even more so on social media in a way that has become really, quite frankly, very dangerous. And so we need to understand that these are human beings, that it's our collective job to be there with them and not to just sort of judge them from how they do on the court or off the court. And it's gotten to a place where in social media, if a player does poorly, a player loses a singles match, or a player messes up on a team component, that they'll get all of a sudden 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 negative posts that are really quite demeaning. And what we're doing is we're really, that's harmful behavior. And so we need to, first of all, protect our athletes and let them know that that's not who they are, and we really need to have much better social media strategies. But going out there as a society, we just need to look at sport differently and understand. I know I've said it five times, but these are human beings just like you and I are human beings, and everyone around here in this great stadium is a human being, and it's sort of our duty to really protect one another.
As one of my interviewees, Josh Childress, and honestly every other athlete in this world, we're not superheroes. We can be superheroes sometimes and act like superheroes, but ultimately we're all human beings. And actually in our first panel, when I mentioned, I was like, ultimately, if we were to distill it down, what this initiative by LG Electronics USA and Transparent Conversations is all about, it's sending the message that athletes are human beings first. And there's that humanistic perspective and approach to sports. And so you brought up the topic of social media, because that's something that was really, really salient and really came out a lot in our first panel, especially, you know, Trace and Jarris were talking about the messages the frequency of messages, the derogatory and really negative messages that they constantly get on social media, you can tell it really impacts them. And they weren't sharing explicit details. And, you know, they kind of mentioned, it's like, I let that roll off my back. I don't let it bother me. And I also kind of mentioned, I was like, it's okay if it bothers you, because I have media peers, some of the most famous people in the world, and it bothers them. How can it not? Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is, but I just wanted to highlight that. I also think that maybe this is coming from me personally, maybe it is a call to social media, the people who are running social media, to maybe put some safeguards in place, because I think it becomes very, very dangerous. It's impacting not just athletes, but our younger generation in ways that we've never seen before.
When you think about athletes, though, Prem, as you talk about social media, the vast majority of athletes, if you engage with them and ask them if social media impacts them, most of them are going to say, no, I mean, I look at it, but I don't pay attention to it. Many of them have been trained to say, I don't even look at it. But we know the truth of the matter is they do look at that, and it does impact them. And it oftentimes impacts them negatively. So finding ways in which to discuss the importance of separating who you are as a person from what that all that information that's flowing towards you in social media that is so negative, how to separate those worlds. And that's not necessarily easy, because we're inundated with it. It's everywhere we turn. Everywhere we look, we're being inundated, and athletes are exponentially impacted by the social media. They have millions of followers, right? Those comments that you can dive into those comments and go down the rabbit hole of negativity. So finding ways, and I think there is something to be said with those social media outlets and organizations, what their role is in diminishing that negativity, and then also how we can train our athletes to be avoidant of or kind of shirk the understanding. It's not easy, though. That's not an easy task.
So I want to agree with that, and I'm going to go to another point you brought up about, you know, what can we do sort of organizationally. So another tennis story, but at the 2022 U.S. Open, there was a world summit on mental health in tennis. It was actually the first sport-specific world summit on mental health. And we took a deep dive into social media because we saw the potential dark side of social media, especially vis-a-vis gambling and gaming.
Especially in tennis.
And there was one concrete example. One player at the U.S. Open had a huge upset. And she got 20,000 likes, and you're the greatest person in the world. And the next round, she lost. And we actually had access to the social media because it was some of the most vile, misogynist, really horrific, non-accidental violence you could not even imagine reading. And this can have a real impact. And so what it led to was one of the foundational principles is that for all of the sports to come together, not for one sport to try to solve this, to look at the real impact of social media, its possible relationship to gambling, and then to work outside of the sport world and to start working with government agencies and the very large technology agencies and say, look, this is an issue, this is a societal issue, it's affecting human beings, what can we do about it? And so I'm hopeful that it's actually going to go to this next level, because it's critically important. We have to get ahead of this rather than sort of reacting to it.
And I would say I agree with you. And I think over the last 8 years or so, we have been reacting to it because it is impossible to keep up with the speed of technology. We're seeing it in the workforce where, you know, companies are doing their best to keep up with all the changes. But I think you're right. I think it's time that we try to be proactive and try to get ahead. The fact that, I don't know if either one of you have seen the documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma. And it's talking about, but basically it's highlighting, it interviews a lot of previous social media executives, so the CMOs, even the founders of Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and all this other stuff. And many of them talk about the process in which how it was created, but they didn't realize the type of negative impact it was going to have. And so many of them kind of joke around. It's like, I don't let my kids on social media, like the company I used to work on. But this is less of a conversation about social media, but obviously all the different factors in today's landscape that are shaping the student athlete experience. And so as we kind of wrap this conversation up, one, I want to get your final thoughts on what kind of advice or suggestions would you have either to athletes or universities or teams as many of these players are walking away from the big dance, whether they are coming back next season as a sophomore, juniors, or whatever, whether they're transitioning to the professional level, or whether they are walking away from sport. What kind of advice would you have to athletes and universities as they help these athletes, as you said, Dr. Hanlon, go through this transition in their career?
Well, I might use a dancing metaphor now.
I love your metaphors. I'm all for metaphors.
So don't look at this as the big dance that it's the only dance. This is a big dance, but there are going to be a lot of dances. And actually, there's going to be so many opportunities to dance many different steps. And so you again come back to your human journey. And the human journey doesn't end at the NCAA championships. That's one important aspect of it. But look at all the opportunities you're going to have to dance for the rest of your life.
I love it. And so maybe my next dance is the salsa, the biggest dance of my life. I love it.
One thing that I think about, a couple things, is reminding those players that this is just one aspect of who they are. There's many, many other aspects of who they are as a human being. But oftentimes, they're not reminded. They're reminded consistently and constantly of the athletic aspect of who they are as human beings. But no one else is talking to them about those other pieces. So as they transition away from basketball or tennis or whatever sport, or even just transitioning away from the end of a season, realizing that there are so many other pieces to who they are. And then I think a point that I talk about in the book is, do you understand your genius? We all have genius, all of us do. But oftentimes we don't recognize or nurture those aspects of our genius because everyone else has told us that you're gonna be a superstar basketball player, right? That you're gonna be a superstar tennis player. And we don't nurture those other aspects of who we are. So reminding people to think about, so what else am I? What else do I love? How do I build that out? Because you can build out those other pieces of you all along, all the way as you develop that sporting side. So developing all pieces of that person is critically important. And how do we intentionally remind our athletes that they are more than that ball, that sport? I think is one thing that we should focus on.
Imagine the idea that sports is not necessarily your life purpose, but is actually setting you up for the thing, your greatest creation, your greatest thing. And that's something that I've kind of put together as I've gone on through my athletic career and multiple careers as I embarked on this next transition as I enter the field of counseling psychology.
Prim, that's what I did with my career.
Really?
I was a former football player, Division I football player, yeah, at Long Beach State, and I used all those sporting pieces to dive into being a therapist in the sporting realm. So that football set me up,
yes,
for what I'm doing now, right? I didn't know it at the time and no one else was discussing it. But if we can be intentional around what you just said, I think it'd be really helpful.
Well, expanding on that, I thought my athletic career was done, but I realize now that my athletic career actually set me up for my 20-year broadcast career, which then is now setting me up for my counseling psychology, yes, career, and I didn't see it until just recently. Yeah. And so all those things, they make feel very fragmented and segmented and unrelated, yeah, but they actually are. And so it's all about connecting the dots. I could sit here and talk to the both of you for hours, but I know you have many other things to do, it's including a game to watch tonight. So Dr. Yeager and Dr. Hanlon, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for coming on here and just showing up and engaging in a very important conversation. I know that's something I'm supposed to say at the end of a show, but genuinely, I hope you can feel my sincerity and my passion for this topic and also everybody else here. And thank you just for normalizing this conversation, and I hope we help somebody today.
Thank you so much. It was indeed my pleasure, Prem and Dr. Hamline. I appreciate sharing the stage with you.
Thank you.
I echo that. It's been a real pleasure and a privilege.
All right. Well, have a wonderful rest of the time. Go shoot some hoops and enjoy the game tonight.
Thank you.
Really hope you enjoy today's discussion in this special NCAA Final Four episode of the LG Transparent Conversations series. And it's all being powered by LG Electronics USA. Can't thank them enough for just including me in these important discussions. It is honestly a dream come true to use my broadcasting platform for such a good cause, and hopefully we are helping normalize this conversation regarding student-athlete mental health and well-being. If you want to catch more episodes of The Next Chapter, you know where to go. Check it out on all the different platforms, including YouTube, where you can watch this entire episode. I'm Prim Saripapat, and we'll see you guys next week.